What a life it is, Jordan, to be tasked weekly and during the regular season twice so to record a podcast about NHL friggin' hockey. It is the best to be here with you, Jordan DeFiggio. How are you?
I am doing pretty well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. I am approaching sufficiently caffeinated, even at this early evening hour as we tape at almost half past 5 p.m. after our work days have begun to wind down. What about your caffeine situation? Did you get into some coffee today? Was it iced? Was it hot? Did you make it at home? Did you pick it up out on the town?
I always make coffee at home. I use a Chemex to just make simple black coffee, and I brought that into the office with me, and it hit the spot, but that was the only coffee I had today. It was this morning. So yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I don't know. Black coffee is more and more the mode for me the older I get, with the exception of my penchant for a good latte made by a profesh out in the world. Although, speaking of black coffee, an Americano with that nice crema on top of it, which is, I guess, it's not really cream, right? It's what they call the way the espresso finishes.
It's like the head of the espresso, basically. Yeah.
So, and of course, I'm talking about coffee and caffeine because it's the top of the episode, and we want to thank our partners, Espresso Amano of Butler Street in Lawrenceville and Potomac Ave in Dormont in the South Hills. Matt and the crew over at Espresso Amano, thank you for partnering with Fly Penguins Fly. Head over to espressoamano.com, listeners, and figure out your plan for getting down to one of their brick-and-mortar cafes in the aforementioned locations. Boy, they have the nicest little blue dishes and cups. Is there a cafe that you can think of out in this world where the flatware and the cups are exceptional?
Yeah, it's a throwback. The first thing that sprung to mind was a shop actually where I worked in Nashville called Honest Coffee Roasters. And they had the coolest matte black mugs for their lattes and their cappuccinos.
Is that the same? Because you know what's funny? When I asked you to come up with a cafe, to my mind came the story of you as the barista behind the counter and Haley Williams walking into the cafe.
Oh, yes. The one and only. Yeah, she...
Of Paramore fame for those who know the band name and not the singer, but yeah.
Yeah, who also just dropped 17 new songs on her website.
Solo. Oh, yep. I can't wait. Honest Cafe? Honesty? What was it called?
Honest Coffee Roasters. But I don't think they use those anymore. This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I really love the drinkware down at the Dormont location of Espresso Amano. Thanks to Espresso Amano for partnering with Fly Penguins Fly podcast. And now, let's get to today's episode. Okay, we are back, and as promised, right back to Paramore, right back to Haley Williams. Jordan DeFiggio, you just informed me that Haley has a solo record coming out. This is big stuff within the Fly Penguins Fly world because Haley's a big influence on you musically, and I've just begun digging into Paramore's catalog and, of course, becoming more and more aware of them as your friend, as I have seen you cover very brilliantly cover a Paramore song. It might have even been one of the songs from that record. Maybe not. But wow, what a voice on Haley Williams. And she's got a new solo record out. So we'll have to maybe even post a link to that on the episode notes.
It's to full disclosure, it's a little tricky because she dropped the albums as individual MP3s on her website that required a passcode to get in.
Is that right?
I saw all of this on Threads and somebody dropped a a passcode underneath, because the only way to get a passcode was to buy a limited edition, limited quantity hair dye from Haley's company. So whenever I went on to try to buy some, because I really, really, really wanted to get
into the record,
songs, they had already sold out. So I went back to where I found the information on Threads, and somebody posted
a code.
A code. And it was, they alluded to basically asking around for a code if the product was sold out. So they're not trying to prevent people from listening to it. They're just making it really challenging to listen to. Not really challenging. That sounds extreme, but there are a couple hoops you have to jump through. You're really going to need to want to listen to it.
Yeah.
If in order to make it happen. But I've listened to a few tracks so far, and she's just brilliant. She's incredible.
We are here. It is Fly Penguins Fly. You came to the right place. Middle of summer, dead of the off season. We've been saying for the last couple weeks that has not changed. It is still, there's very little going on when it comes to Penguins hockey right this second, because those players are on vacation. Some of the front office folks should be enjoying a little bit of vacation time as well. Although I can say from firsthand experience, Dan Muse, Kyle Dubas, and Chris Letang were all at the rink directly opposite of where I was sitting PA announcing for the GOAT League last season. Little Alex Letang was in there boxing the faces of the little like gummy dummies that they put out on the ice as pylons.
Nice.
So there's action going on around the rink. Somebody like Chris Letang never really sleeps or rests when it comes to his workout and off season. So not a surprise to see him there. Same goes for Kyle Dubas. All right, Jordan, not too much Pittsburgh Penguins news to share, period. To the extent that, and we'll get to you in a minute with some of this, but even the articles that are coming out from the Penguins staff at The Athletic, as an example, are about things that they've already published articles about in recent weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like updates on something that's, you know, well written about, but not really an actual news item yet, more of a speculative thing. And kudos to those writers for finding the words and the ink to spill when there isn't that much happening. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring up a piece that I took a look at. One, I would say probably for a lot of people, the biggest bit of hockey news in recent weeks has been the outcome of the Hockey Canada trial. You know, Carter Hart and others implicated in this alleged sexual assault, and the young woman whose name has been, you know, kept to initials, EM, for print purposes and broadcast purposes. We'll keep it that way. We'll respect that. I don't know the name anyway, but that's what has been given. Her testimony was found to be quote unquote unreliable by the court there in London, Ontario. The piece that I just read was on theathletic.com, and it was a co-written piece from Dan Robeson and Katie Strang. I highly recommend it. It's a little bit of a dark read, in the sense that apparently as the trial was wrapping up and these hearings were happening, these court dates, one of the final examinations of the alleged victim here, as they were being examined by the defense attorney, who was just absolutely grilling her and making her out to be like a drunk off her ass so-and-so, who was like, maybe should have been more responsible. I mean, this is the defense attorney. It's their job, I suppose. But the like of a giant street party for a junior hockey tournament game is coming through the walls of the courthouse, like to the point where the judge interrupted the examination to say, just so everyone knows, there's a really loud street party going on outside. It looks like it's going to get even louder, but continue. How unprofessional is that to begin with, to interject that into the testimony, but that this is the essential, not just, it's like a metaphor for the entire thing, is that hockey rules in this particular city, more NHLs, you know, draft picks, drafted from this particular junior team than any other. And this is where the trial's happening. The players, whether they were in the courtroom or not, I presume that they probably were. And this woman sitting there with this story to tell, these accusations, is essentially being, it seems like it's stacked against the plaintiff in that way, where it does feel like the city, the court system, the local area there, you know, driven so much by the agenda, hockey first, maybe just a second. I'm not going to go off too hard on this thing. Just another example of, you know, don't believe her. That's how this comes off to me.
There are a lot of instances, I feel, where this exact scenario just repeats to the point where this is the pattern, where there's a set list of phrases and statements that are made about the woman who comes forward, or to the woman who comes forward, basically heaping all of the burden of responsibility and proof. And that if a woman or anyone, if any person is coming forward to report some type of assault, sexual or otherwise, but specifically sexual, there is a mountain that they have to climb in order to have any type of hope that they will be taken seriously, let alone win the case. Because for them, it's not about winning. It's about making sure people are aware what the perpetrator did and attempting to stop them from doing that again to someone else. And that is where I find myself most frustrated, because there's so many attempts to shoo it away as if women are constantly looking to ruin the lives of men.
Right.
There are always power imbalances in these types of scenarios, and you see it play out most frequently in institutions like the church, where the leadership will scramble to protect the perpetrator from any type of accountability or consequences for their actions, and they will do whatever they need to do to protect the face of the institution. And in this case, it's the hockey players who are representing this league and this team. And,
or as though in the case of the church context, that a conviction of an accused person would change the basis or the validity of the religion itself, just because that human person fucked up. Like,
it's
like, like, that shouldn't be a worry. What that makes you think after that point is like, okay, what else is wrong with this institution?
It's not so much the faith that they're trying to protect. It's the money that is that is lining the pockets of anybody who's higher up in leadership. And there are certain people who genuinely really do believe that they're doing the right thing, but it is so much more sick and twisted to attempt to protect an abuser for the sake of maintaining an organization's structure, because it's all about their church and their people, and not about the people in the church, but about the leadership. Because if that crumbles, then so too does the institution around it, and they
those individuals' feelings of I don't want to take it too far into the theory of why they don't want the truth to come out. I want to speak on the emotions that I guess I feel when I see someone else, like you said, being shooed off, being discounted, being discredited. And then ultimately, I mean, the sense of, I can't even begin to imagine what it would feel like to decide to come forward and put yourself out there. And yeah, sure, someone out there is going to say, yeah, if it's true. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. How are we supposed to find out if these things are true if the ice is tilted against them, so
which
to speak?
It usually
to use a
is.
Hockey metaphor. But to the
it's bleak. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's big news. Definitely check out the article, Hockey Canada Trial Piece in The Athletic by Dan Robeson, Katie Strang. I do, again, the NHL does seem to be ahead of this a little bit in a relatively cool way. The players union, whoever the reps are making the statements for the players union are really upset with it. And they're saying the verdict was not guilty. These players should be able to return right away. And that really just starts to stink even worse. And then you say, well, at least the league is saying, look, we will determine whether, and there is a rule. There is a rule in there that says Bettman gets to decide pending a league investigation. So this is really not over yet as far as the conviction did not happen in the court system in Canada. This still has yet to be tried within the NHL itself in the disciplinary sense. That should be very interesting, and hopefully we'll be learning more about that soon. Okay, there is a World Juniors event happening up in Minneapolis, and I didn't even know it was going on because my mind has been on like 100 other things this summer. You can learn more about it by actually just going and checking out the latest episode of Locked On Penguins by our good friend Hunter Hodes. And they did a real rundown on some of the activity by some of the Penguins' recent draft picks and other prospects. I do want to say that apparently Will Horkoff, who's a new Penguins draftee in this recent entry draft that occurred in Los Angeles, did pretty well. He's got himself a goal or two in this World Juniors event happening right here in the U.S. Go check out the latest episode of Locked On Penguins, and you can hear Hunter and Patrick, the co-hosts of that excellent show, talk all about that thing. I did mention briefly that I was not as focused in on the World Junior stuff, but a lot of juniors players playing in the OHL, NAHL, and USHL can be seen at the UPMC Lemieux Sports Complex tomorrow night, Wednesday, July 30th, second to last regular season week of the GOAT League, 4-versus-4 league happening up at UPMC Lemieux Sports Complex. I may have said that twice. Again, I'm the PA announcer for that league, and singing the national anthem for at least one of those games. So please come on down. It is free to enter. Games start at 5:30, 6:40, and 7:50 p.m. Right up there where the Pittsburgh Penguins practice on the FedEx sheet of ice. All right, Jordan, we talked a little bit before we started recording on a couple of pieces that you saw, skimmed, looked at in The Athletic and other publications, tweets that you saw, things, activity around a little bit of Penguins news. Could you take our listeners through what has been discussed, whether it's brand new news or just further reporting and speculation on items like that?
A lot of it is reiteration and things that have already been discussed. So the two pieces that I kind of looked over were both from Josh at The Athletic. And one of them was talking a little bit more about the interest from Lemieux and Burkle in buying some portion of the Penguins back. So there really hasn't been any movement there, but now that it's something that has been explicitly stated in the ether that they are interested, that's something that people are going to be keeping a really close eye on, because that could, something could change at any moment. So I think they're just trying to keep that fresh on people's minds, so whenever the moment does come, if it comes, they can just jump right on it. But yeah, just keeping an eye on that. And then there was another piece that Josh wrote, just kind of covering the potential of Brian Rust and Rickard Rakell getting dealt and why that would be a good thing. And we talked a week or two ago about how you are really hoping that doesn't happen. And I was
particularly Rust. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was hoping that it wouldn't, but anticipating it would. And Josh was just kind of diving in a little bit deeper on the current status of the Penguins team in terms of prospects and their future, what that will look like for a timeline for, you know, when they're actually competitive again.
Sure.
And what Kyle Dubas has done a really good job of so far, per Josh in his article, is up the quantity of prospects that that they have, because, you know, they were just bottom barrel. They barely had anybody in their system for a little while because they were just trading away draft picks left and right so they could try to compete now. But what Kyle Dubas has been doing has been collecting as many draft picks as he can get and acquiring as many good prospects as he can. But what Josh kind of highlighted was these prospects are good, and what their ceiling in the NHL level will be is probably good NHL players. And what the Penguins lack right now is potential great prospects, because they just haven't picked high enough, and they haven't had anything within the first five picks in the draft in a while. And that's what they need to start focusing on. And at this point, they're not going to be competing for a playoff spot this year. That much is evident. And Brian Rust and Rickard Rakell both are kind of entering the back half of their careers. And some people may argue that despite how well both of them have been playing the last handful of years, they already have entered the back half of their careers because of their age alone. It's tough on the body. So they are in that spot right now where they have a limited amount of time left for their maximum trade value. And what Dubas is probably going to need to do is look at fielding offers for them, because the reason they didn't deal Rakell at the deadline was because the offers that were being made just weren't high enough. But now you look at a guy like Brian Rust and a guy like Rickard Rakell, and they make players around them better. And they have such a solid veteran presence that they will elevate a team that not necessarily together, but, you know, either one of them will help a championship ready team now potentially get over that hump. So it will be interesting to see. Obviously, there hasn't been any movement in terms of what Dubas has said about what he's planning to do with those guys. But as we get closer to the start of the season, as we get rolling and, you know, teams start sort of solidifying and figuring out what they need and where they need to get it, it'll free up some cap space for the Pens. It will get them draft picks, and it will hopefully put them into that top 10, top five spot in the next draft after that. Like, they just need to start drafting higher.
Yeah, not necessarily the Gavin McKenna spot, but just more solid top end talent. Yeah, I'm not really any longer in the camp. I mean, look, it would be so cool to get a guy like Gavin McKenna. I don't see it happening. And, you know, you mentioned Kyle Dubas and his dealings in his still relatively young tenure, although we're getting into what'll sort of be the early part of the middle of Dubas's tenure here. I look at this, we didn't really talk too much about it, but it's a really big deal, although we didn't mention it. The Arturs Shelovs acquisition, this goaltender that we've now got, who's essentially the odds-on favorite to be the backup to Tristan Jarry heading into the season. You could even look at it as Shelovs is the starting goaltender, depending on how camp goes. But you want Jarry to do well out of the gates so that he raises his trade value, of course. As far as how long we'll have Shelovs, what he'll do in a Penguins uniform, I have absolutely no expectations of that. My assumption is that Dubas hopes that these very young, very cheap prospect goaltenders with lots of talent will become his number one and two goalies, and that he can then probably flip Shelovs for something. But that trade itself, the acquisition of Shelovs from the Canucks organization, we got Chase Stillman just earlier in the year in a trade for Jonathan Gruden and Cody Glass or something like that. And he just hung around in the system, and then, bam, Dubas has these picks available, and he has these some players available that he had acquired, and turns it into a goaltender, a guy who, as mm-hmm. we talked about briefly, is a physical presence in the crease, able to withstand a lot of hacking and whacking after the whistle, and knows his angles and seems to have a great awareness in the crease. But furthermore, it was like cheap and easy to get. Guy was the MVP in the Calder Cup finals. So that's a really cool thing and a great example of just what you were discussing about, you know, Dubas acquiring stuff, acquiring young mm-hmm. players. We don't even need to keep every single one of them around. Some of them are going to be trade bait. Some of these much talked about defensemen and young forwards who may or may not end up on the Penguins roster. Maybe Ricard Raquel can't get dealt, but Brian Rust is the more sought after piece. And mm-hmm. you package Brian Rust up with another one of these prospects and this and that. Who knows what you can turn around in the way of trade value. Could be like a lot of people have said, a first round pick, which is huge. And again, you're looking 4 or 5 years out as to how that eventually realizes itself. Really exciting. Nick Belsky, another one of our fellow podcasters. This is one of those shows where I'm talking about everybody else's podcast. I like it. Let's talk about everybody. Mm-hmm. We got Tip of the Iceberg podcast with Nick Belsky. That's another great one to check out. And a mm-hmm. good friend of the show. We've done some cross-pollination with those guys. And he was talking about how excited he is for this season, no matter how bad the Pens could possibly be, just to get to watch Tommy Novak play with Evgeny Malkin and to watch Rutger McGroarty get more of an opportunity. How exciting it was when he scored his first goal in a Penguins uniform, and the joy on his face when that puck went in the net. This is where we start going into our music calendar. Jordan, before we started taping today, Jordan DeFigio, a great songwriter, my illustrious co-host, also the front person in Noah Jordan. Check out at the Noah Jordan on all social media, and you will be performing at 222 Ormsby in Mount Oliver, PA, Friday, August 22nd, along with a Buffalo-based singer-songwriter, an excellent musician and performer, Stephen Babcock. What up, Stephen?
He's the man.
He is the man.
You're also the man, but you're the man.
Yeah, we're hanging in the singer-songwriter space. We both get to know you and occasionally collaborate with you as well. So that's Noah Jordan at 222 Ormsby in Mount Oliver, Friday, August 22nd. Before that, this upcoming weekend, Sunday the 3rd of August, as part of the Club Cafe grand reopening, I, Jeff Taylor, will be performing with a really strong trio of Brian Wolf on drums, formerly of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and other great bands like When St. Vincent and David Byrne toured and did the Love This Giant tour. Brian was the drummer. He's played with St. Vincent in other contexts as well, and other great bands. My Brightest Diamond, Anton DeFade of the Common Heart, and also many other great bands will be playing bass. So come see us at Club Cafe, right down there in the South Side on Carson Street. It has been remodeled. The green room has been remodeled. The whole thing is freshened up, and Keystone Artist Connect, thanks for putting Jordan and I both in their sights for bookings in the present and future. And they'll be hanging out there, the new owners of Club Cafe, along with, I think, some other partners. So congratulations to them, and thanks for making me a part of that one. It is music. It is at Jeff Taylor Alive for the music, at the Noah Jordan for Jordan DeFigio's music project, Noah Jordan. Great guitar player, great singer. Jordan, I always love hearing you and can't wait to make it out to that Ormsby show myself. Any other random Dan musings on the Pittsburgh nice. Penguins as we head into the final stretch of absolutely nothing going on with the Pittsburgh Penguinsdom?
You said, you mentioned just in passing Rutger McGroarty's first goal, and it got me thinking about how, you know, these next few seasons are going to be rough in certain ways, mm-hmm. but we are going to see a lot of guys coming up into the system who will be getting their first NHL goal.
Oh, so
and
cool.
Will be, you know, putting up their first NHL shutout. And yep. I just, they're going to be really cool player milestones to look for
You're allowed to say shut out now because it's not game day.
Yeah, it's there's nobody who's potentially on the verge.
You can not even close. There's never it's not even going to happen. Not even going to happen.
But yeah, you know, things like that. It's
can I interject?
Yeah, go ahead.
Cuz I'm a poor listener. You were probably about to drop some sick pearl of wisdom.
I doubt it.
Much is my want to destroy what otherwise could be a constructive conversation or a budding friendship even because I just can't listen. love you, Jordan. But you know what? Folks out there, Penguins fans, Jordan just ignited. You just ignited the Penguins fandom in me again because I could smell the autumn coming when you said that. And I could imagine us with our jerseys on up at the Super Bowl, down in one real quick before we hop across the street and then probably hike up the hill to use the Highmark Gate. Cause I prefer to go in up there by the team store. Mm-hmm. It's also usually a lot closer to, the elevator right there. If we want to go up to the 200 levels and the, level six, folks out there, Penguins fans, think of the Pittsburgh Penguins as a junior team for a second, right? A junior team or a Team USA event, or I don't know how to put it, but like, yeah, I know Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang are still on the ice. But with the exception of Sid, even with Sidney Crosby, even when Sid was at his absolute prime, and I wasn't around for that, I know you guys are all going to school me, he was never like your flashiest player. He's always been the grinder, down behind the goal, setting up plays. Yeah, occasionally pulling off something ridiculous like that goal against McDavid and the entire Oilers team when he interlaced around everybody back in 2018 and scored like one of the highlight goals of his career. But I'm just talking about the way the Penguins actually are right now. They're not going to probably be competing for Eastern Conference champions, probably won't even make the playoffs. So look at it like Jordan looks at it, right? Right now, and the way you're talking about it, Jordan, these opportunities just to see these young guys come up and have that moment of glory, that's enough for me to throw on my Penguins shirt, throw on my hat, throw on my jersey, go down to the rink, buy a ticket. I mean, what if this upped the attendance? What if a new wave of, you know, fanaticism, I guess is the way to say it, fandom, caught in Pittsburgh. Let's get in there and show these young guys what it means to come to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not going to be like that in reality. We're going to still have lower attendance and it's not, we're going to the playoffs and this and that.
Just wait. It'll happen.
Fans like Matt Bondy, fans like Pat Burns. I'm just thinking of some of the other people in my life. Shout out to Liz Gould, Pittsburgher who made her way out to Jersey City. Who I text with, and we've sort of swapped cities in a way. She's an actual Pittsburgher. You know, someone like that wants to come out to these games and watch these young guys come up. So, all right, Jordan, I don't know. I'm just pen-splaining what you already so eloquently said. And in fact, I interrupted you, capping off your entire point.
No, we got it all out.
Oh, you know what else I've been meaning to tell you? Let's go, Pens.
Let's go, Pens.